Welcome to RCGP Scotland Presents Generally Speaking. In this, the ninth episode of the podcast, RCGP Scotland Chair Dr. Chris Provan and Dr. Miles Mack discuss the benefits of relational continuity of care, how it can be implemented, and the barriers to doing so in a pressurised general practice setting.
Welcome. Today I have with me Dr. Miles Mack, a good friend and colleague who we've been talking about continuity of care and various things, and Miles has done a lot of work around this. I'm looking forward to having an interesting conversation about continuity of care. So, welcome, Miles. You're very welcome to talk about this subject. And do you want to tell me a bit about yourself for those who don't know you?
Yep, I'm Dr. Miles Mack. I've been a GP in Dingwall Medical Group for 32 years. And for continuity's sake, I've actually been working in the same consulting room for all that time, which seems ridiculous. But at least so I'm at that stage of my career where I've seen many bits of it which have been of real interest. I've done various things in my career. One of the high points was doing your present role as RCGP Scotland Chair from 2014 and 2017. And since that time, I chaired the Scottish Academy, which brought together all the Royal Colleges, and did that during COVID. And now I've slightly stepped back from representative roles, but still get involved in various bits and pieces, and been very glad to be getting involved in some work on continuity of care.
Yes, and we recently had a paper which came to the Royal College in Scotland's Scottish Council around continuity of care, and that illustrated, you know, why continuity of care is so important. But do you want to just tell us what the main features of continuity of care really benefit us?
Yeah, I think personally to think about what continuity of care is, it's been defined in a number of ways. I think it's been thought of as informational continuity, so actually having the information in front of you which you need to care for the patient, or team continuity, working in a group which where we all understand our roles and have got a clear understanding of how we're looking after a patient. But all the clear evidence for benefit is about relational continuity. So that's about valuing and building long-term relationships with patients over the years. And we've both become aware of the increasing evidence for continuity care. I think personally, I've increasingly get much of my satisfaction from long-term relationships with patients. There's patients who have been looking after for many years. And it's just nice when you know them and understand them. And its benefit comes quite apparent when a junior colleague or a locum asks you about a patient. And suddenly they get this sort of rundown of what's been happening in their lives and what's likely to be happening and what else might be relevant. And just makes us aware of just how much of an advantage we have when we're looking after our patients with continuity of care. So I think it's pretty good for doctors, and I think it's also got some really clear benefits for patients in the NHS, which will probably come in more detail. But there's been some recent work, particularly by Dennis Pereira Gray, looking at some of the evidence. Has been very good about publishing it. And when I saw how much of the evidence was, I asked the chief medical officer to whether this would be something for discussion at a senior medical and public health medical leaders forum that we both sit on. And I was delighted that he got such a positive response, not just from the CMO, but from our colleagues on that committee, and led to a bit more detailed work about bringing the evidence together. And really grateful that it was taken on by the CMO as part of his Realistic Medicine program. But I think that still leaves an awful lot of work for all of us to do to make sure that that work continues. And I'm really delighted how strong you've been for continuity care and the role that the Scottish Council of SGPs is going to have in bringing these forward in a meaningful and sensible and consistent manner.
When we talked about it at the Scottish Council, it really reaffirmed everybody's thoughts around our belief in continuity of care. Like you, I've worked in my own practice for many years, and I enjoy patients coming into my consulting room, and I just have a store of information in my own head, and you have trust and rapport really with them because you've been through a lot together. I think the message is really getting across, but this is not something that we're just wanting to do. It's really evidence-based, isn't it, Miles? And that's what I'd like to just bring out now, and between us, go through a list of the benefits. Shall we go for it?
Go for it, absolutely. I think the first thing was actually benefits to patients. That's evidence from Norway suggesting 15 years of continuity care reduces mortality by 20%, which is just which is startling. I thought that was extraordinary and quite hard to understand until you start to think about some of the things that we're talking about. But actually, hard endpoints, to have that sort of level of evidence was really good.
Absolutely. I mean, it lowers mortality. That's maybe perhaps because we know our patients and can work with them and not expose them to too much over-medicalization, which is another one, and get that balance right. Better quality of care. And I'm quoting from our own paper here, the list, reduced admissions as well is another one. Accident and emergency attendances. Any more you want to highlight?
Well, I think the preventative medicine agenda is there too, but actually when we've got that quality of relationship, it's that much easier to get the trust in patients for some of the preventative measures that we want to implement. I've been quite sad that we've lost the ability to vaccinate in general practice, because I think there was a huge opportunity for us to vaccinate patients who probably would not have necessarily taken a long hike into the nearest centre to do that, and may not have been persuadable. Whereas actually to have something, have a vaccine in the fridge there and then, say, look, I can just do it for you now, and there's enough trust built over the years that we can do that. And I think that goes for many other different modalities too. And actually making sure we get the prevention right. It's far easier to make a judgment about whether to start a person over 60 on a statin, for instance, if you understand what their values are, what their beliefs are, and what their level of morbidity is. So they actually make sure that, yes, I think this is why realistic medicine is easier for us to do when we actually know the patient. Health inequalities bit is for the same, that actually these patients find life difficult, and we've got to judge how we approach that carefully, make sure that actually what's important to them is what we're dealing with, but at the same time being able to be there in the longer term for some of their other needs and medical needs, and adding in that preventative thing that we might not deal with if it was more of a transactional consultation.
That's right. I mean, it's about trust, and the evidence supports screening uptakes greater, symptom disclosures greater as well. They tend to tell you more and follow your advice once you've actually suggested preventative or other treatments. So all of these things fit in with that. Really interested in the health inequalities part of it. I work in a relatively deprived population, and the evidence shows that a lot of patients in these type of situations find it difficult to build up trust with the medical profession in general. But once you have that trust, it's really, really useful and helpful as far as helping them through the difficulties in their lives. Less complaints, less litigation is another one. Again, there will always be ups and downs, especially in a long-term condition, and once you've built up that relationship-based care, then that helps to protect both sides from that, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And so we start to get onto this is why it's good for doctors, unless complaints, unless litigation is definitely better for us. And I think that, again, the other reason why it's good for us is actually there's a satisfaction of the job well done and the joy of seeing people go through their lives in ups and downs through the life. Makes a very different sort of experience than just being there for the individual illnesses as they present. Not just that, but actually it looks like we can reduce our workload. A lot of people might think that this continuity of care is actually jolly hard work. And potentially it is that you are investing on individual patients, but actually that investment is repaid with not just with better outcomes, but actually less attendances and being able to allow people to get on with their lives better without us for longer, which I think has got a big advantage. And that comes back to some of the issues to deal with some of the patients, particularly who are struggling with the ill effects of trauma over the years, and particularly when it's relationship trauma. They find it very difficult to trust people in authority. And one of the single most important things that we can do for these patients is to give them some sort of contact with a known person over a longer time.
Absolutely. And I think people really are concerned about the systems under pressure. You know, okay, so continuity is something else we've got to do on top of this, but actually it's beneficial to patients, staff, and the system. Ultimately, talking about the system, really, it leads to lower healthcare costs overall. Any thoughts about why it should lower healthcare costs?
I think for many of the reasons we've talked about already, it's about trust. It's about better outcomes. I think there's less of a need to fall back on investigations. There's more of ability for us to trust our experiences and trust our gut feelings when dealing with some of these patients. And I think it gets to the heart of what the Chief Medical Officer is looking for with realistic medicine, about providing the right care at the right place in the right way, rather than necessarily just jumping in with 2 feet and feeling we have to do something at every stage. That business of being the clerk of records, being there to witness people suffering, sometimes is just as important as doing things.
I think that's absolutely right. Around there's a lot of transactional and what I would call taskification, which I've maybe mentioned on the podcast before, around this and fragmentation of care, which is perhaps why continuity has reduced. I think the evidence, as far as I know it, Miles, is that over the past few years, continuity of care has reduced. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think we're certainly seeing a number of pressures which are making it more difficult to deliver that. Some of them are political. The way care is being provided, with less investment in general practice and more reliance on a wider practice team, it becomes quite difficult to be able to promise continuity if patients can't necessarily expect to be seeing a doctor at all when they go to surgery. So this is one of the things which we're going to struggle with. And I must admit, I just wanted to tear my hair out with the idea of GP drop-in centres. It seems to go against all of the ideas about continuity, all the ideas about preventative care. I'm moving to a patient-focused model of care. And this seems to be a politically opportunistic announcement. I know that the college and no other medical organizations weren't involved. It seems like this came from a political space. And I think this is some of the things that sometimes this political opportunism gets in the way of sort of delivering the sort of care that the college has been striving to deliver, both with your recent report, but even going back to the essence of general practice, which came out with my predecessor, Dr. John Gillis. So it is going to be more difficult. There are time pressures. It's harder for people to wait to see the doctor of their choice if that wait's going to be a very long time. and some of the present systems of triage and same-day appointments again, will make that difficult. And I think we have to be very careful that we don't jump into these things thinking of providing better care, but without a careful consideration of consequences.
Yes, I think there's been actually an emphasis on very rapid access to healthcare, which has perhaps taken away from the value of that continuity and seeing the same person, which is really valuable, especially in the more complex care. Just talking about walk-in centres, we were surprised by the situation, and we've already appeared in the media around if you were going to invest money in general practice, and there's, you know, always a finite budget, you wouldn't do it in this way, according to the evidence that we know, because you get fragmented, a lack of continuity of care. The evidence shows that you don't get reduction in A&E attendances. You don't take demand from other areas in the system, you're duplicating services, you're costing money, all of those types of things. And this has been extensively looked at in many studies in England after they tried it there. So it's not the way forward that we would recommend. The vast majority of evidence is based around having just generally a stronger primary care, which improves outcomes and continuity and everything that we're talking about here. I think that's something that we really need to think about, the evidence around that. Miles, obviously you have a practice where you and your team value continuity. And how have you actually implemented that in your own practice?
Yes, you're quite right. We're a big practice with 11,500 patients and quite a number of doctors. It was something that we were keen to develop because we could see the role of it, but it seemed extremely daunting. So we did embark on something which seemed to be fairly sort of restrained, in that rather than going for a system whereby every patient is just registered with one GP and expects to see them, we've gone to try and identify some cohorts of patients who will particularly benefit from that. So these are patients, elderly and frail, complex mental health problems, complex physical health, alcohol and drug addiction, palliative care particularly, but we've also extended this into the care home patients as well. As a very starting point, we wanted to be clear about what our intention was to provide better continuity to that group. But we also wanted to do that in a way which is reasonably meaningful. So we needed some way of identifying those patients that we were wanting to provide continuity for. So it was very much done on an opportunistic basis, that if we saw a patient who we felt would benefit, it would start a discussion about, I'd like to be your key doctor. This is what you'll mean. Doesn't mean I'll be able to see every time, but the intention is that we can allow our staff to make adjustments to make it more possible for you to see me, and mean that my colleagues will know that that I'm your key doctor for long-term care. It's not straightforward. One of the other barriers that we've got is the IT systems don't necessarily support continuity care. Either in identifying who the continuity care doctor is, or actually being able to measure it. So measuring it, continuity was quite important for us. And so for that reason, we recode patients who were offering it with the recode provision of continuing care. And that means that we can isolate those in that group and to see whether they were providing the sort of continuity of the care that we want to do. We also need to make it possible to identify the patients when they phone up. So there's a pop-up note on the appointment book, and a pop-up note comes up when you enter the patient record, simply saying that who the doctor is. We've been running this for a number of years, 3 or 4 years now. I'm really grateful to some help with a couple of medical students who've been with us for a year, and they've both done quality improvement projects on that to try and refine the system to something like it is now. And also I've been doing some work to look at the outcomes to see actually whether we're delivering the continuity that we'd like to. It's becoming reasonably well established and ways of working, adjusting to that. It's something that we discuss at our morning huddle if a new patient's been added to the continuity register. We're not achieving quite the level of continuity we like to do, but it's certainly providing a positive experience for us. And I think from initial skepticism from some of my colleagues, we're now at a stage where I think it's something where we're all pretty committed to. Some of the skepticism came from different places. Actually, some of this skepticism, I suspect, was from my colleagues who felt that they were already doing that and didn't feel they needed a system to regulate it. But over time, I think the benefit of doing that, that when you're going into a notes with a difficult result and you realize it's someone else's patient, actually it takes the pressure off you to feel that you need to fix everything at the one time, that actually it's fine to leave it to the key doctor, and actually that's something which the key doctor is grateful for. So it's been running for a wee while. I would highly recommend others try this, because I think it's a small step, and it's a step which you can take with some of our patients in most need. And I think I suspect that they are often the highest attenders, and to give them the benefit of the reduced attendance rate is going to have a disproportionate benefit to the practice. It actually makes us more keen to look into this in more detail and actually move to a full GP patient list system, but we're not at that stage yet. But I think it's something which we'd like to consider in the longer term.
You mentioned some of the barriers to providing continuity. Anything else you want to bring out in that, Miles?
Well, I think one of the things that I would like to see is continuity being embedded in the IT systems, that actually it's really complex and quite a hassle calculating what our continuity rates are. And I think it would be a great benefit for us to embed into our GP systems systems which would be able to monitor the continuity care that we're offering our patients. So I very much hope that we can move towards something in that respect. And I think the other bit about the IT systems, it is clunky setting it up. You're having to add data into, well, I think we count it at four steps, really. You know, so change the user doctor, add a recode, pop-up box on the appointments, and pop-up box on the journal entry, which isn't necessary. It's clunky. I think it's worth it, and it's not something you need to do repeatedly. But we haven't been able to find a way we can streamline that at the present time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It's around making that measurement simple so you can get feedback on how you're doing. I think overall there's capacity problems in primary care, number of GPs, and changes in the way care has been provided and has become a bit more fragmented in some ways, as you touched on previously. I think we have to get the message out there, though. This is doable. And again, I've seen evidence from studies across the UK where you can increase your continuity. Just going back to the college paper I mentioned earlier on, it really focuses on having quality improvement resources available to practices, so at cluster or practice level they can actually look at their continuity and work as a team. And we've got also the college continuity toolkit. Really other measures is growing the GP workforce, having flagship practices. I don't know, Miles, you might be in there somewhere as a flagship practice, I suggest. Thinking about potential contractual opportunities in Wales, they've made it part of the contract to, as a QI project, look at continuity and really promoting the value of continuity across the system and to the public. You also came along to our patient forum, Miles, to talk about continuity. Any reflections on that experience?
Well, I'm always blown away by how much this is something that it's very easy to talk to patients about. They get it. They were very encouraging about what we're wanting to do. And I think that was it was lovely to be able to share what we're trying to do, why we're doing that, and talk about some of the barriers. I'd always be scared about being a flagship practice because then it implies that people can start to look in more detail. And this is difficult, and we don't achieve the levels that we want to do. But I think the most important thing is that we're trying. And you can talk to anyone. I talked to my hairdresser about continuity. She gets it. And now I suppose the fact that she's had a great deal of continuity cutting my hair is relevant. But it's that relational bit which I think is important to patients. It is balanced by some people who live very different, very busy lives, just wanting a transactional encounter. I think you tend to get the benefits of it when you've developed one or more chronic illnesses or one or more episodes of health which have been more protracted. But we do need to remember that those continuity journeys start a long time before that, and every time people present with a transactional encounter is an opportunity to start the benefits of continuity and actually start that journey together. I think one of the really important things about this is it's a great way of demonstrating and putting in practice what the value of general practice is. And this is one of our unique selling points, is that we are looking after patients from cradle to grave, for whatever condition they come to. So we set ourselves up with the opportunity to do continuity care, and it is the basis of many of the ways that we do the things that we feel are the most value in the longer term.
I think that's right. I think it's the human side of medicine which we mustn't forget in this high-tech world, the experience of illness and continuity of care that patients get. So we need to have continuity of care really at the front of our minds when we're designing services and how we take things forward.
I think it's something which every practice should at least consider. I don't think it's difficult to make the first steps. And my experience is that once you make the first steps, then it's very much easier to carry on because you start to see the benefits. We look forward to hearing from them and hopefully supporting them with that journey in the future.
Absolutely. Can I just say thank you very much, Miles. It's been interesting bringing out the value of continuity of care. And we will continue to work together on the human side of medicine and take the best of general practice forward. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for listening to Generally Speaking, the RCGP Scotland podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date with all of the work and news from across the college.